that wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is the bike show.
You need to turn on the mic in that room.
It takes two wheels and no gasoline to keep yourself healthy and to keep the air clean. You can ride in the sunshine, you can ride in the rain. It takes two pedals, two wheels and a chain. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. You can take a ride up in Forest Park. You can ride with the light if you ride in the dark. You can ride from the mountain down to the beach. You can ride on a trail, you can ride in the street. You can ride through a puddle, you can ride in the rain. On a bus, you can take it on a train. Take a ride to the waterfront or down from the zoo. You can take a ride anywhere you want.
Welcome to the KBOO Radio Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and streaming live on KBOO.fm. All shows are also available on www.bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. My name is Alon Robb, and I'm happy to be joined today by co-host Nedra Deadweiler, our engineer, Ty Walker, and you, the listener. And that includes a couple of friends who are listening in Cyprus, Turkey, and Iran. So welcome. Good morning, Nedra. Are you on the line? Nedra? Okay. Nedra's not on yet, so we'll wait another second here. And a little technical challenges here. Nedra, are you on? Okay, so I guess we'll talk to Nedra later, but in the meantime, I'd like to say that hope this finds you well and healthy. Those who live in Portland are perhaps taking part in some of the dozens of cycling events connected with Pedalpalooza. Pedalpalooza is a yearly celebration of cycling and community. It's been going strong since 2002, and there are rides along many themes and interests, and people always welcome to suggest more rides. The events are created by community members and are coordinated by Megan Sinot and William Sue, who deserve a big thank you. And over the years, we featured some of the individuals connected with Pedalpalooza, including co-director William Sue, who was on our July 2022 show, which, like all our shows, is archived at the website, the KBO website, and also bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. In the first half of the show, our guest will be Jamshed Patel of Leicester, England, and until recently, Portland, Oregon. Jamshed is a car-free cyclist and activist whose actions, working with some of the most vulnerable but also resilient individual and groups, make a real difference. In the second half of the show, co-host Nedra Deadweiler will speak with Eric Sedano, who is perhaps better known as Bicycle Nomad. An adventurer and activist, he writes on his website that for him, quote, "A bicycle is magic in motion, not only in the most basic sense as transportation, but also as an instrument allowing for the exploration and fostering of novel cultures, people, and connections." Bicycle Nomad was created with a goal to bring together and inspire dreamers and riders. So the Bicycle Nomad will be in the second half of the show. Okay, before we get to our first guest, Nedra's joined us. So good morning, despite the technical challenges.
Yeah, good afternoon, Alon.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Good. Enjoying summer, because we are in it right now.
Great. And you're in Atlanta, of course.
Oh, yes. I'm in Atlanta, downtown, to be exact, right at this moment.
And in the past month, if I'm not mistaken, you were at the Highlander Institute, which is well-known for training activists. What brought you to the Highlander Institute, and what were some of your experiences like?
Yeah, it was a super exciting program. It was one of the programs, Participatory Action Research, and it was with the Mid-South community. So I was from the Southeast, but I went over to the Mid-South and talked about education and other tools using culture for building community power. So just learned a process, power to organize around issues collectively, and to strengthen that skill in myself. So I was one of the folks that was selected we applied, and I was accepted and super excited. I learned a lot and also gained a new community of friends.
Great. And congratulations. I will say goodbye for now, and we'll reconnect around the half hour.
Sounds great. Have a great show.
Thank you. Our first guest today is Jamshed Patel of Leicester, England, and until recently Portland, Oregon, a car-free cyclist and activist. Good morning, Jamshed, and welcome to the Bike Show.
Hi, Alan. Pleased to be here. Thanks for welcoming me onto the station.
And we are happy to have you with us today, and you sound as if you're in the next room, even though you're across a couple of mountain ranges and oceans. So,
yes, good.
Yeah, welcome. Before we get to your current activities, I always like to ask people if they were always cyclists, and if so, what are some of your early cycling memories?
My earliest cycling memory would be when I learned to ride a bike, which was outside the house where I grew up, where my mother still lives, and I was just on the little bit of sidewalk. And I just got it, and I was so excited. I rushed into the house and told everybody, "I can ride a bike now." So that's certainly one of my oldest memory of me cycling.
And how old were you at the time?
I'm not sure. Maybe I was 4 or 5 or something like that. Not sure.
And this is in Leicester, England?
Yes, it is, yeah.
And
of course, back then, on the street, there was way less cars. Mm. So, you know, it was way safer in those days. Mm.
And for some of us, Leicester, England, is in the Midlands. We know it through its long history, beginning in Roman times. And also, if you're a football fan, as I am, for its football team. But can you tell us a little bit about the city, maybe its geography, history, and what was it like to grow up over there?
Well, Leicester was, and still is to some extent, an industrial city, had a very big textile industry and shoemaking industry. It's just south of Nottingham, and Nottingham was the home of Rally Bikes, which were, in the end, exported to many places worldwide. Living in Leicester, it's in a dip, so unfortunately the pollution from any vehicles really accumulates in Leicester. So there's a high incidence of asthma in this city due to diesel and fumes from vehicles, motor vehicles. So being a cyclist, I feel much better about not putting more fumes into the air in this city. Mm-hmm. There's more and more bike lanes in the city, which are great. And it's a matter of people haven't really made that change over yet. At the moment, a lot of bike lanes are predominantly used by delivery people, but there's a very strong core of people that are promoting cycling. It's picking up. There's people working with people with families and with female riders and those with disabilities. So things are picking up slowly in cycling in Leicester.
That's good to hear. And I don't know how old you are. I assume you missed the wonderful Thatcher years. But does cycling in your city and maybe in England in general, is its promotion, does it depend if the government is Labour, Conservative? Are there certain leaders, as Thatcher did, to try to destroy every community and social action? Is there times that it's better? What is the city council like in Leicester these days?
Well, I do remember Thatcher. I was a teenager then, and I don't think it makes a great deal of difference in terms of road building, possibly, if it's the Conservative or the Labour Party, which is equivalent, more or less, of the Democratic and Republic. Mm-hmm. And parties. This year, Rishi Sunak, the current Prime Minister, is committed to building, I think, 4,000 more miles of paved roads. And England is already, Britain is one of the most road-dense places on earth already. So it's not, I don't think it's something that stands out to people when we have a Labour government that there's less roads being built. But it might be marginally different, but yeah.
And
I've seen right through my life, whichever government's in holding power, it's increasing cars.
Hmm. And you mentioned the textile industry in the past. What do most people, what kind of occupations do people have today?
I'm not sure. I think there's way more people working in the service industry here.
Mm-hmm.
And I just mentioned that a lot of the bike lanes are used by Deliveroo and another service delivering meals to people. So there's way more service industries than there used to be, rather than production industries.
So how did how did you become so passionate about cycling? Was there a moment, some event or moment, or was it kind of a gradual process?
Well, I think back then, like I'm 54, way more kids were cycling. They were cycling to get around, to go to the park, to see, you know, to go on adventures in the countryside. So it was much more of a thing, I think, possibly for youngsters then to cycle around. I mean, people would go off on camping adventures. I never did as a teenager. But I think, What really cemented that in me as a cyclist is in that short film, is realizing the effects of me having a car and how most people in the world don't have cars. You know, I don't know about, well, but I mean, the figures are quite amazing how little people have cars in India. I think it's about 60 cars per 1,000 people. And there's 1.4 billion people in India. And in England, I think it's about 600 cars per 1,000 people. So from a young age, I was aware of the inequality, vast inequality of consumption in the world. And and seeing creatures, walking to school, because we never had a car. We couldn't afford a car. And I remember once going to school and seeing a dog. It was on the way back from school, seeing a dog run over and killed. And I remember seeing dogs hit by cars. There wasn't so many cars then. In those days, it was a kind of switch over.
Uh, Hi. We lost our guest, who's now in Leicester, England. So the engineer will try to connect with him. And I'll say that you're listening to the KBO Radio Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, and 90.7 FM, and streaming live on KBO.FM. All shows are also available on bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. My name is Alon Robb, and my co-host is Nedra Deadweiler. And until we got the forces of technology and the universe have conspired against us, or a mishap, we've been speaking with bicycle activist Jamshed Patel, who's in Leicester, England. Today is... on a personal note, coming here to the studio, as I always do, riding my bike from Northwest Portland through downtown, I had a flat tire. I must have gone over some of the many pieces of glass that are all over downtown. I tried to be careful, but I must have missed one. So maybe today is a day of technological mishaps, but let's hope it... these are the worst things that happen. So, Ty, is our guest back on? He's trying to do
it. Hi, Alan.
Oh, okay, yeah, we lost you, but I'm glad you're back. And
thank you. Yeah. So, as I was saying, just seeing animals dead on the road, I think that inspired me to... keep with a bicycle. Also, there was a friend at school that got hit by a car, and he was damaged, and his brain, you know, he was never the same after that. And one of my grandma's friends got run over by a vehicle and killed, and, you know, those things stand out. And also, growing up with asthma, like I said, a lot of people with asthma in the city, and walking past the back of cars and finding it difficult to breathe near the exhaust. So, and then, you know, thinking I'd be doing that if I was driving a car. But I love riding my bike. There's so many things I love about riding my bike. It's not like I'm riding my bike because I don't want to drive a car. Mm-hmm. I'm riding my bike because I like riding my bike. And I'm very pleased that I'm not, you know, not needing to have a car at the moment. There may be a time in my life in the future when I have a car, and I feel a need for having a car, but up to now I haven't.
And the video you refer to is one that's available on the Bike Portland site, and was made by Portland filmmaker Amit Zinman, who has a wonderful site with many videos about people and their bikes, and a few people like you who are car free, as I am too.
His site is Bike Stuff PDX.
Okay, so that and we hope to interview him in the not too distant future. So, being you moved to Portland, and what were some of your first impressions of the city as far as cycling, but maybe also the city's feel? You know, a lot of times when you talk to people around the world, they have images of bicycles and liberalism and also homelessness. So what were your first impressions?
Well, my father lives in New Jersey, and my first trip to Portland, I got the train across in 2001. I didn't have that much time before I went down to Southern Oregon, but I remember thinking, this doesn't feel like being in a big city. You know, I had time in the southeast. And I returned again to see my father in 2001. I got the train across again. And actually, it was a few years later I got the train across again. And I had more time in Portland. And it felt so nice as a cyclist. People, I mean, a lot of people in the world, they think of the car, of USA as dominated by cars. In many respects, it is. But Portland's probably one of the nicest big city that I've lived in for riding my bike, in terms of people being caring about cyclists generally, giving more space than other places. I think in England people care about cyclists, but there seems
in a lot of the very vehicle-dense cities, more contempt for cyclists than I experienced in Portland, because Portland's got such a strong bike culture, I think, that it's gained more respect. Hmm. Maybe. And I don't know. But being given more space on the roads really stuck out to me cycling around Portland. And the great difference in wealth, yes, that does stand out. So many people living in tents, and a lot of people with quite a bit of money in Portland. Mm-hmm. But the community activities, that really stood out to me in Portland, and definitely all the different biking events and pedapalooza, you know, bike mm-hmm. rides so many times a week right through the summer.
Mm. And one of the videos, there's another video about you on the web that I saw, a short video where you ride with quite a lot of equipment and carry things, loads, you and a friend, from Southeast Portland to Beaverton through many different kinds of roads and paths. While you were in Portland, you were involved with Food with Dignity. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Oh, yeah. That project was getting food that otherwise would be composted or thrown away, that was had blemishes or maybe too ripe to be sold in shops. It was all organic, and taking its places away, people with low income or no income or houseless people, homeless people, could gain access to it and, yeah, eat nice food. That was someone kindly let us have a table outside their house. Mm. So that table's still there, and I don't know what it presently is. It's one time a week that food gets put there, but also there's other times in the week that some people may access some food from a farmer's market or something and take it along. So yeah, we have a lot of food that goes to people that otherwise wouldn't be eaten.
That's good. And in Leicester, you're part of Wheels for All. What is that organization about?
Leicester Wheels for All provides cycling experiences to people that ordinarily wouldn't have them. Provides opportunities to have fun and exercise on bikes for people maybe with Down syndrome, on the autistic spectrum, Alzheimer's, dementia, people visually impaired or blind, people without legs, or, you know. So we have a number of bikes. We have a couple of hand crank bikes. We have tandems. We have lots of trikes. We have bikes where you can steer them from behind. A lot of our bikes, you can put them on fixed wheels, so it encourages people to pedal in the right way. We've got attachments to hold their feet onto the pedals, their hands onto the handlebars. Yeah, we've got a whole lot of bikes that help lots of people have experiences on bike that otherwise wouldn't. One bike that really stand out, we've got two of them, are electric assisted bikes. They're wheelchair platform bikes, so they accept people in wheelchairs. You reverse them onto it and then hook them in at various the wheelchair in at various places to keep it secure, and then people in wheelchairs. So a couple of weeks ago, we had a 101-year-old go for a ride on one of our bikes.
May he or she ride a few more years, many more years. Our time somehow is almost over here, and there are still a lot of questions I'd like to ask you. One is about being car-free. So what do you do if you want to go to the beach? Let's say you were in Portland, you know, you want to go to the mountains or beach. I visit my daughter, who lives in a small community in Washington, rural community, so I take the train, and then, you know, I meet her, she drives her car, but, you know, I wish we had a great train system here, but what do you do if you want to go, you know, out of town?
Well, I have taken my bike on Amtrak many times, mm-hmm. and I think it's great and really quite inexpensive, especially mm-hmm. if booking in advance. I think like a single ticket, or is it a return ticket to Eugene for about $40? Mm-hmm. And that's just a few days in advance. So I've taken my bike many times on the train. I've been to the ocean once, the Oregon coast once, mm-hmm. and that was on my bike.
And once with a friend when I was on my way heading south, put my bike in their car. But I know there is a bus service from Portland that takes bikes to the coast. But a bunch of my friends go to the Mount Hood most years and camp there, and they do that all on bicycles. I haven't joined them up to now, but it's just it's about a day to Mount Hood to as far as I know. So if I go further, I go on the train usually.
And our next,
or I use the Max if it, I use the Max to get around to places where, you know, like if it's late at night and I don't want to ride on roads, you know, some of the narrow roads.
So it is possible to do. And our next guest, who bicycle nomad, who's ridden all over the world, would probably laugh at my question about getting from Portland to the beach. Before we end, we have just a few minutes, but I'm, you know, reading a little bit about you and your work and the organizations you're involved with. It's clear that, you know, bicycling is an important part of your life, is one of the main aspects of your life, and also that it's tied to a broader belief and way of living in the world where social justice, equality, caring for each other, mutual aid, or not just words you read in a book, but a way to live. So I'm wondering about what motivates you. Are you hopeful in the face of all the challenges? Are you optimistic in general about the state of the world and the planet?
I think lots of things are getting better. Some things are getting worse. And I don't think I have an optimistic view or a pessimistic view. What motivates me to keep riding my bike is I really like riding my bike. And I like, you know, there's so many things that you can experience riding a bike that you might not. Things that you'd miss if you're in a car or in a different vehicle, you know. So,
I mean, for me, I've done a lot of research about cycling in the Middle East, and I'm always encouraged my research, for instance, about early women cyclists in the Middle East, which, despite tremendous opposition, you know, religious, societal, familial, even in 1890, there were women in Constantinople, Istanbul, you know, defying the odds, defying people, men mostly, but also some women, telling them they can't ride. So the history of cycling for me is another hopeful sign and you know, way of being in the world. So
I agree. I'm as enthusiastic about bikes as I've always been, and I love seeing people learn to ride bikes and switch to using bikes for transportation and for fun and exercise.
Amen. And what is next for you? Where might we find you in 10 years? Are you going to be back in Portland? Or
I don't know, really. My mother's 85, and I like being here with my family. My father's in the USA, and I like being there visiting my family. I love Portland and my friends there, so I'm not sure. I wish to avoid using planes, so that's a challenge.
That is the same with me, and I'm planning... Next time I go to Europe, I'm planning to take a train to New York, a boat to England, and then ride a bike. And I'm planning to do it also with my beloved and with a wonderful little four-legged family member.
I've done that. I've actually gone across numerous times on ships. So maybe we could have a chat about this sometime. I'm taking a bike on cargo ships.
Yeah. You are listening to the KBO Radio Bike Show, hosted by Nedra Deadweiler and Alon Robb, and the show could be heard live at 90.7 FM and also streaming on KBO.fm, and all our shows going back to 2002 are archived on www.bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. Thank you, Jamshed Patel, for being with us today and sharing your knowledge and love of cycling. And also thank you, big thank you, for helping add to the positive change in the world. Clearly your you know, life and values are rooted in a sense of justice and equality. So much success and happiness to you, and may you meet your dreams. So are you still there, Jamshed? Okay, so thank you so much. And I'll say bye for now. So in the second half of the show, co-host Nedra Deadweiler will speak with cyclist and activist Eric Sedena, who is also known as Bicycle Nomad. And we will take a short break for a few KBO station messages, so stay tuned. Today is a day of technical challenges. I apologize. So welcome back, despite the technical challenges. And you're listening to the KBO Radio Bike Show. And in the second half of the show, co-host Nedra Deadweiler will speak with Eric Sedena, also known as Bicycle Nomad. So Nedra, if you're on the line, take it away. Nedra, are you there on the line? I apologize. Okay. Nedra? We're waiting for co-host Nedra Deadweiler to be on the air and talk to Bicycle Nomad, as he is known. In the meantime, I will mention that...
I totally forgot about this.
You want me to take it?
Yeah. But I don't know how long it's going to be.
Is this Bicycle Nomad? Okay. And Nedra?
It's an interview. Yeah, I'm going to jump into a quiet place here.
Hello, is this Eric?
Yeah, this is Eric.
And my name's Alon, and I'm Nedra's co-host. We're waiting for Nedra to get on the line. Today has been a day of many technical challenges, so
okay.
Please bear with us. Where does this find you? Are you in Santa Monica? Or?
I'm in Santa Monica, yes.
Okay. And Nedra, are you there?
This sounds good, or you need me to get into...
No, you sound well, but we're waiting for our co-host, Nedra, to come aboard.
Okay.
So in the meantime, I'll say hello to you and ask you a little bit about yourself, maybe going back to some early cycling experiences. Were you always... Okay, Nedra is on. So Nedra, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Alon. Hi, Eric.
Hello, Nedra. How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you. Good to hear you.
Yes, nice to hear you.
Yes. I guess we'll complete Alon's sentence. An early experience of yourself and the bike?
Yes. Can you repeat that? Sorry.
Oh, I was just wanted to start where Alon was leaving off, which is just kind of this opening question we ask everyone, is an early experience that really helped you to see that bicycling would be an important tool to use. How did that transformation happen?
Well, it's a couple of answers. I start with, right after college, my first job was in Philadelphia, and I worked downtown.
And I wanted to save money, but I couldn't. And my salary wasn't a good salary to save money. So I started thinking, well, I don't need a car. I live in this city, which I could walk or ride my bike. And I live downtown and I work downtown. So why don't I just get rid of my car? And because it was creating like insurance and payments and maintenance. And so I got rid of my car and started commuting by bike around the city of Philadelphia. And I just fell in love with it. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like, I don't need a car. And years later, I moved to Miami, where I'm from. So I went back home after 10 years of living in Philadelphia. And I was car free at that time. I didn't have a car. And I wanted to see more. So I rode my bike from Miami to Key West, which is about 155 miles. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I had so much great experience. I had met a lot of people along the way and ate a lot of good food and great coffee. And I wanted to see more. And on that trip, I decided, I wonder if I could go from border to border. And 8 months later, I went up to Canada, to Vancouver, Canada, and I rode the Pacific Coast Highway all the way down to Tijuana. And from there on, that was about 13 years, 14 years ago, I just fell in love with traveling by bike. And every year after that, I would take time off and do some type of expedition by bike. 14 years later, I've traveled the whole country by bike, every single state except Alaska.
Mm. Wow. I still hear enthusiasm in your voice. I'm happy to see you in person.
Honestly, I'm blessed to have found traveling by bike have changed my life completely. I am the person who I am because of those experiences and meeting those people along the way. Some of those people that I met throughout traveling the U.S. are some of my good friends today. And to have that experience, to travel around the country, to see the landscape, the history of this country through bicycle, I know how fortunate and, it's a privilege to have done that.
Right. It's a privilege to be able to take off from, I don't know, the dailiness of life and then go and explore on a bike. So you're kind of doing something that some people will be like, oh, this is untraditional, but for you, it sounds like it's a normal part of who you are. How do you interact with those curiosities? Like, how are you doing this? Like, you don't supposed to be doing this. I mean, for people who don't know who you are, because we're on the radio, can you, maybe break into how this is you and like you kind of have turn that on its head of like who bicycling is for, who bike touring is for, because usually we would see, you know, the poster child would be a white man of any age, but you're not a white man. So
no, I'm a person of color and with long dreadlocks all the way down to my back. but you know what, it goes back to when I was a kid. I had a really good upbringing with my mom and my dad. I grew up and I was born in Panama. And when I was a kid, my mom early on would just allow me to explore. I've been curious since I was a kid. I would go on solo hike when I was like 9-10 years old. And my mom would allow me, never limited me. And when I was 12 years old, Nedra, my mom took me on a trip that changed my perspective and really I fell in love with history. What happened was she took me to a trip to Mexico to see the pyramids and the temples of the Mayan and Aztec civilization, and it was a two-week expedition with my mom and this tour guide, and we would just climb the pyramids. They will explain about the ancient civilization of the Mayan and Aztec, and I was just like, wow, this is amazing. I was 12 years old and I'm still that curious person. I fell in love with history and it's my passion to travel through history. But I just love traveling. It just feeds my soul. And that lady, my mom, would tell me early on and would tell me over and over and over to the point where I believed her. And she would say, you could be and do whatever you want to do, regardless of who you regardless of how you look and how you speak, or you know what I mean? Like, it was just like giving me that confidence, and I am that. I own my space regardless how people think I look. I'm very confident to travel the country and the world because of my mom, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really beautiful. And I think that's a powerful thing of like knowing who you are, that no one can like diminish that, and you really, and owning it and walking into it and living into it. And every day when you're bicycling, and just recently, well, maybe it's not so recent anymore, you were on a tour. How were you on the Buffalo Soldier tour?
Yeah.
So
when I started traveling by bike on my second expedition, I went from Miami all the way up to New York City, and I went through like history, right? Like I traveled through St. Augustine, Savannah, Georgia, Charleston. I went into Jamestown in Virginia. And again, I saw the landscape of the country, but then I saw the history of the country, like the Civil War and all that stuff. And I'm like, this is pretty interesting, like traveling and learning. Again, right after that expedition, I started thinking, I love to travel by bicycle, but learn more about the country and travel through history. So I started questioning myself, like, who were the first people that traveled by bike, and why did they travel by bike? And again, my mind goes into a historian, like, why did they go and where did they go? So I started looking online and researching, and I saw a lot of like expeditions, one person, two people expedition, mainly Europeans. And then I came across the Buffalo Soldiers, the 25th Infantry that was stationed in Fort Missoula, Montana, and there were black soldiers. And I was like, wow, I did not see people of color traveling by bike, especially black men. And I'm sure it happened, but maybe it wasn't documented. And because it was done by the Army, I was able to find a lot of documentation, like original photos. I have journals of the lieutenant who was in charge of the expedition. They also travel with a non-military journalist, and he was 20 years old, and I came across his journal too, which is very interesting to read because he's not military, so I'm able to read military accounts and then non-military accounts from the journalist. So I just fell in love. I was like, wow, how come I did not know about this? See, I started traveling by bike when I was 34 years old. And if I would have learned this before, Nedra, if I would have learned this like in middle school, high school, or college, I probably would have been motivated and inspired to travel by bike way before I did, right? So I kind of felt cheated. I was like, I went to school in Daytona Beach. I went to a HBCU called Bethune-Cookman University, and I lived in Miami. And in my mind, I always think about routes. I'm like, okay, what's my next route? And what's some routes that I want to do? And that route I would have loved to do, like, after college, like, after the semester, before the summer, I would have traveled home from Daytona Beach to Miami instead of driving, instead of flying, or instead of taking the Greyhound. But I didn't know about this lifestyle of traveling by bike. And that's when we talk about representation, that's what we're talking about, because we have to see ourselves in places that we're like, oh, yeah, those guys did it in 1897. I could do it today, you know? And that's why this project became so personal to me. And I have a son that I want him to, like, know who his dad was, but then why I was inspired to travel by bike, because these guys were doing and we're camping out in 1897. And again, I think it's a story that needs to be celebrated. They're pioneers of cycling, pioneers of the outdoors. It's American history, is U.S. history, and it should be celebrated that way.
Yeah, very good. I'm just going to do a station announcement. We are on KBOO Bike Radio Show out of Portland, and you're listening to Eric Cedeno, known as Bike Nomad, Bicycle Nomad. So I think, you know, where you are talking now is this idea of representation and how people have impacted the world and the community around them, the society around them, and the other idea of documentation. How do people leave present and let people know that they were there? And there's all kinds of points of views that can be written and documented about a situation. So you have just come off of this expedition, but you have gone on many, many rides, as you described before. How are you telling your story? How are people, how are you leaving something behind, breadcrumbs or journals? What are you leaving behind, and how are you documenting your story?
You know, I did this when I started traveling by bike. It was just for me to learn more, right? To learn, again, like I mentioned, the landscape and the history of the U.S. by bicycle. It was just my curiosity. Like, I wanted to learn stuff that I didn't learn in school. And the more I went into it, especially with the Buffalo Soldiers, I just have a lot of accounts, right? Like, I have a lot of accounts that now, for me, it's about their story, and potentially I'm thinking of writing a book, right, to inspire people who will be inspired, the next generation of bicycle explorers, right, or the next generation of historians that may want to know more about history or traveling by bike or exploring. So there's different ways that I might leave a breadcrumb, like you say. I like that term. I use social media currently to inspire and motivate people. And currently I'm thinking of writing a book, and maybe I have done some journals about some of my expeditions. So maybe eventually I will put it out there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do find your Instagram to be highly inspirational, and the fact that you are, not only have you taken in this information and you're kind of, but you're also really reliving the journey, reliving some of the stories that you've read, and you're engaging various people. People are coming to you, you know, they're coming, not necessarily that you need help or support, sometimes you do, but they're coming to your aid. They're bringing food and nourishment and community as you're coming through towns. Can you share maybe a reflection on or a story about some of those encounters that you've had?
Oh my, yeah, so many encounters. And that's why I have changed. Traveling changes you because of your experiences. Sometimes it's negative, sometimes it's positive. Luckily for me, 14 years of traveling by bike, I have experienced nothing but positive and kindness of people. Just to give you an example, in 2014 and in 2020, but in 2014, I went from New Orleans, Louisiana, all the way up to Niagara Falls, Canada. And what I did is I wanted to retrace a route of the Underground Railroad, a specific route that was is called Follow the Drinking Gourd. And that's a song that people use, the freedom seekers will use to navigate into freedom. It was actually a GPS. It wasn't just a song. But I tell you that because I left New Orleans, and a day later I was in this empty road, dirt road. I haven't seen any cars. It was very humid, and I ran out of water. And I had about another hour before I could get some water. And all of a sudden, this pickup truck
they passed by, and about 200 feet, they stopped, and they started reversing. And they asked me a question like, where are you going? Where are you coming from? I was kind of scared because I'm like, wow, who are these people? And the passenger was like, we saw you about 15 miles south of here. We were trying to figure out, you know, your bike has all these bags. Where are you going? I'm like, I'm going to Canada. And she's like, wow, on your bike? And she said, yes. And the driver was like, hey, we have a cooler full of water. Do you want some drinks? You want some water? And I'm like, wow, who travels with a cooler full of water? And for them to extend that to me was very kind. You know, they didn't know that I had run out of water, but they knew it was hot, and they were actually cutting grass at this house. So they knew it was very humid, and they were like, you need any water? And I was like, that was very kind of them. And just like that, I have many stories. I got to another story that I have was when I went to, I was about 10 miles, 15 miles south of Columbus, and I also ran out of water, and I saw a Buddhist monk watering his garden at this temple. And I asked him, hey, can I get some water? And he says, yeah. But we inside the temple, we have cold water. So he took me inside the temple. Long story short, other monks asked me if I wanted to eat because they were about to serve dinner. And then after dinner, I was asked to stay with them at the temple. And and I shared like an amazing evening with seven monks. And we just talked about life. We talked about Buddhist philosophy. And I was just like, wow, how amazing, right? Like those experiences. And that's what it took for freedom seekers. And by no means I am comparing my journey to what they had to go to, but freedom seekers had to depend on other people's kindness for shelter and for food and things like that, and to be able to experience that similar kindness of people was very. It's the reason why I keep going out and having these experiences, you know.
Yeah, it's very compelling. I am also wondering if you were going to do this again or introduce someone who may want to do an expedition or just do a long bike touring trip or go for a ride. What kind of advice or what would you offer from your experiences to someone who was like wanting to take this opportunity for themselves?
Yeah, I kind of like will encourage people to travel by bike and first maybe start the way I started, which was like small trips, right? Like wherever you live, you could go and find like a campsite and find a bicycle friendly route. And then do like what we call an overnighter and ride your bike there and then spend the night and carry your gear, your camping gear, and then return. You know, and sometimes it doesn't have to be camping all the time. I use camping because a lot of my expeditions are 30 days plus, and to stay in a hotel or that's very costly, you know. But so I encourage people to start small. And then eventually, you know, expand their knowledge and their curiosity and going to the next level, which is multiple days. But there's a lot of resources nowadays. There is Adventure Cycling Association, which have amazing maps where people could travel around the country by bicycle. And again, that's Adventure Cycling Association, and they have maps of, and they have people that scout these routes, and they're bicycle-friendly routes. And literally, you could go from wherever you are across the nation, east or west. And I just think that traveling by bicycle is so amazing because you're able to use all your five senses, right? Like you're able to use your eyes, your voice, your ears, and then be able to talk to people. It's just like you're able to feel things and experience things that you would not on a car
or on a plane, right? So it's a very special way to travel and to see the landscape of the country.
Yeah.
Or the world.
Oh, the world, anywhere.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? Are you
Yeah, there's, again, I have, Nedra, I have like, what's it called? I have enough routes in my head for five lifetimes.
Yes.
I have enough for multiple lifetimes. But right now I'm focusing on researching more about the Buffalo Soldiers, the Bicycle Corps. You know, there's that history is, again, very personal to me because I just thought, you know, and by no means I'm celebrating military. I've never been in the military. I don't feel any type of way about military. So when I talk about Buffalo Soldiers, when I talk about the Bicycle Corps, I'm just celebrating black men on bicycles and black mm-hmm. men that travel cross country, right? Mm-hmm. However you feel about military, that's up to you. Again, my project was just celebrating people that we usually do not see on bicycles, especially in 1897, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's what I'm celebrating here. And I want to learn more about them. I want to know, like, I know their names. I know where mm-hmm. they were born. I know where they died. I know where they're buried. I actually went mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago to Chicago to see one of the guys in the cemetery where he's buried, the mechanic of the expedition, Private John Finley. But what we don't know a lot is that their faces, we don't know what name goes with what face, and that saddened me because that potentially is somebody's great-great-grandfather, and if that was my great-great-grandfather, I want the world to know, right? So how awesome he was. So I did the 1897 expedition, but there's two other expeditions that were done in 1896. So I'm going back to do the first expedition that was from Fort Missoula, Montana to McDonald Lake, which is about 250 miles and back. They did it in 4 days. Next year, I'm doing the longer version, the second expedition that was from Fort Missoula to Yellowstone and back.
Uh-huh.
That was about 800 miles. So those
wow.
were the three expeditions, and I want to make sure that I complete all of them. I want to make sure that I understand what they went through. I want to know exactly. A lot is known about the Lieutenant Moss, who was in charge of the expedition. And
mm-hmm.
I give him a lot of credit, but we don't know much about the black soldiers, and that's who I'm focusing on this project. I want to know
yeah.
their personality, you know, like, they didn't write a journal, and that saddened me because they were servicemen, so they weren't there to write a journal like I'm able to write a journal, you know. But I want to learn more about who those guys were and what kind of routes they went. And I know a lot about their bikes and things like that, but I want to learn a lot more than what I do know. And potentially this year, I will be going back to the National Archives Library, which is in D.C., and there's a lot of information about that expedition, and I want to dig in more, you know?
Yeah, it is. I really appreciate the work that you've done thus far around raising the visibility of the Buffalo Soldiers and even questioning who they were as people, humanizing them. Because it's an
yeah.
opportunity for all of us to rethink these histories and stories and narratives and contemplate what we don't know. So thank you so much, Eric, for joining us today and sharing a little bit about your work, because there's so much more that we could hear. But I want to say thank you and hope to see you again soon.
Yes, thank you for this opportunity.
Okay, back to you, Alon.
Thank you to our guests. You have been listening to the KBO Bike Show. Today's show had some of its technical challenges, but I hope that's the worst that ever happens to us. My name is Alon Rob. I'd like to thank our guests, the Jamshid Patel and Eric Cedeno, who's also known as Bicycle Nomad and has a wonderful web presence. Also, I'd like to say thank you to my co-host, Nedra Deadweiler. It's always a pleasure working with you and also a learning experience. I feel very fortunate to be co-hosting with you, Nedra. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Ty Walker, Chris Smith, and Josh Hetrick, who make all shows available on bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. And a big thank you to you, our listeners. I hope that those in Portland participate in the fun Pedalpalooza events that are going on all over the city, and you could find more information about them on the Shift to Bike site. And also, I hope that the summer months are good ones for you, for the world. I hope that the days ahead will see more actions towards making our home, the Earth, more bike-friendly, environmentally conscious, and centered not on greed and hate, but on human and planetary needs. And also, I hope that love does triumph. Thank you for joining us today. May all your rides be safe, enlightening, and joyful.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is noon. Next up is Jazz Lives.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy miércoles 7 de junio del 2023. La emergencia pública mundial causada por el COVID-19 puede haber terminado oficialmente, pero la pandemia seguirá con nosotros por muchos años. Tampoco está claro que los gobiernos hayan aprendido lo suficiente del brote como para estar preparados para luchar contra los nuevos microbios emergentes que podrían desencadenar calamidades peores. Estas son las crudas conclusiones de los científicos de que la Organización Mundial de la Salud ya no considera el COVID-19